This week on the Jock and Nerd podcast, we review Dev Patel's Monkey Man and the season 2 finale of Invincible. Plus, the Fantastic Four movie finds its Silver Surfer. Quick thoughts on Shogun, the three-body problem, and more. All in this edition of the Jock and Nerd Weekly for Monday, April 8th, 2024.
Hi, this is Gilbert Gottfried, and you're listening to the Jock and Nerd Podcast. Why? I don't know. Check. Check one. All right. This is for all you fans out there. Let's give it up.
Yo, what's up, listener? How's it going? Thank you for pressing play, and welcome to the Jock and Nerd Podcast, where we give you comic book and superhero TV and movie news, reviews, and whatever we choose.
Jock and Nerd!
My name is Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the jock.
He's a nerd.
And joining us, a fella who has survived two apocalyptic events in the last few days. A full solar eclipse and a rare East Coast earthquake. We call him Monkey Bams.
Yeah, that earthquake.
But he also goes by Rug Boy. Rugs, you okay over there? Shaking?
Oh, yeah. We're shaking and a-baking over here.
Was it crazy? Is that the first like earthquake you've actually experienced?
It was a 4.8.
That's pretty big.
And yeah, like you could actually, I thought, see, it gets windy where I live.
Yeah, what do you think was going on?
So I'm sitting there, I'm watching TV, and I'm like, man, that fucking wind is really pounding the house. Shit. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I'm like, all of a sudden, it starts shaking. I'm like, wait a minute. This isn't wind. This is something else. And then I see my TV that's hung on the wall starts wobbling. And wow. I'm like, oh, shit. So I'm like, I guess I'm going outside right now. So I just went outside. And by the time I got down the steps, it stopped. And I was like, oh, shit. I'm like,
did you realize it was an earthquake?
Well,
how long did it take?
I had to call a couple people and confirm. Like,
did you feel that?
Did you feel that?
Did you feel
that? Was it just me? I call people like far away from me, like that don't even live in the same area, you know? And I was like, did you feel that? So it was a lot of doing that.
Yeah.
And then, because like, I don't have TikTok. And so I guess people were telling me that their TikToks were blowing up.
Oh.
And that they knew it was an earthquake from TikTok. Mm. And because the news didn't pop it on until maybe like 30 minutes later. So, and then I was like sitting around waiting, watching the news going, okay, is there going to be an aftershock? What's the protocol? What do I do? Cause like there's the idea is that there could be a foreshock, which means it's like a little earthquake and then a big one follows it.
Right.
Which is the master shock or whatever. Right. And then the main shock.
There's the afters.
And then there's the little aftershock that diminish. So we had about, like four earthquakes in that day. Like
wow.
The big one and then like smaller ones.
Where's even the fault line? Like you don't think of an earthquake happening there. I didn't even know.
One that runs from New Jersey all the way into New York.
Holy shit. I had no idea that was the fault line. Is that
the first time you've ever felt one?
I've been told that there's been earthquakes and never felt them, but this was the first time. Like shit shook. Maybe like one of my figures fell, but not a lot. Not more than like one or two figures had fallen from my shelf. So that's why only one figure fell. So it wasn't that bad where I got it. But there's video of people that had it. They were like right on the
point
in New Jersey where like their houses like shook legit. Like, like stuff was falling off the walls and stuff. So that sounds like it would be scary.
Imran, have you ever experienced this earthquake?
No, it is one thing I have not experienced.
I'll give a quick story. Not story. It's not story? Even a,
okay.
It's not even a great story, but I was in college in Champaign, Illinois, which is like central Illinois. And it was during the day. And all of a sudden, there was like tremors, like these weird tremors.
Yeah.
And I thought like a big truck was driving by. And sometimes, you know, if a big truck drives by, you might feel some sort of vibration.
Yeah.
Or a plane, but the tremors kept going for a little bit.
Oh, shit.
And they lasted probably, I would say, about 15 seconds or so.
Yeah, that's a long time.
And this is back before, you know, Twitter was real big. So I was like, what the fuck was that? And then, put on the news and it was like, yep, an earthquake just happened in Champaign, Illinois.
Do you remember how big it was?
No, I had no. Oh, I didn't even know what to look up.
Oh shit!
Like, I just went, oh shit, that was a fucking earthquake.
Wow!
But it took me a minute. It took me a while. It took me I didn't know what was going on in the beginning. I was like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, I've never been.
I don't think it was a 4.8, but it was definitely like a little rumble.
Yeah, that is crazy when just the ground. I've never.
A 4.8 isn't enough to really fuck shit up, like, unless you're like close to the epicenter. Yeah. But like anything over a 5.4 or something like that, like anything over like a 5.2, 5.3 is going to fuck shit up.
It's one of the, it's medium, but I think it's one of the bigger ones they've had on the East Coast for like 100 years. I think they've had a couple of 5-point somethings like in the 1700s or whatever, but
right.
It's been a while. So I didn't get to participate in the earthquake. I did participate in this solar eclipse, and I'm so glad it's over because I'm so tired of everybody talking about the eclipse. You can see the eclipse. Here, what do you need to know about the eclipse?
Don't they happen all the time? Don't they happen every year?
I feel like they happen all the time, like over water where you can't get to. Nobody knows, like, what's the big deal? But did you guys check that out at all? It was like 92%.
Yeah, I saw the eclipse.
Totality. I got a picture. I looked at it with shades. You didn't.
I didn't see the totality. I just saw the smiley face.
Yeah,
I didn't really even look. I saw that it was during it at dark, and I was like, I'm not going out there. I'm good.
Yo, I looked up there, and it was a fucking bad signal, like in front of the sign. I was like, that's weird. It was the Death Star. It's not the moon. That's no
By the way,
moon.
The earthquake in what I experienced, it was a 5.2.
Oh, that's big. That's a big one.
I wasn't right near the epicenter.
Okay,
so
okay.
It was like a little not as.
Where was the epicenter?
There was right in between Illinois and Indiana in the south.
Oh, okay.
Southern region, yeah. 5.2.
Yo, and that shit was on my birthday, so you're welcome. I don't know.
What, the earthquake?
Yeah.
And U of I is where? Is it south?
Yeah, it's like central Illinois.
Okay.
Anyways, everything's fine now. The eclipse happened. The earth didn't open up and swallow everybody, and we're still here. So, you know, I think we can.
I was like hoping that I was going to get put into a chasm like Lois Lane in Superman 1.
Yeah, there's no. And then you Superman who had to fly around the world backwards.
Yeah, he's going to rip the door off and scream and make the earth go back.
What I thought of was the scene in This Is the End where they all start falling into the pit.
Oh.
Yes.
Zombie apocalypse.
That's what it's going to look like. We survived it. Nothing happened. Moving on. Let's talk about some geek news here. Let's go.
The Jock and Nerd Podcast.
Look, you've seen the title. We got two very fun things to review. So I just got one thing in the news and discuss. Want to get your thoughts on, and then we will get into it. And the one thing is all those rumors we heard weeks ago about Fantastic Four and the casting of Silver Surfer was going to be a female. Well, I guess the rumors were true. Deadline is reporting. Emmy winner Julia Garner is set to play a Silver Surfer in the Fantastic Four movie. This is not a gender flip situation. This is another character named Shala Bell, who has roots in the comics.
Yeah.
As Silver Surfer.
Shambhala?
Shambhala. Shalala. Well,
what
Shambhala.
Do you mean by that, Imran?
What?
Like, she I don't think she was officially a Silver Surfer. She just got the power cosmic from Norrin Rad.
Yes, she's actually Norrin Rad's longtime, like, girlfriend and love interest. They've had a crazy love story, originally created by Stan Lee, John Buscema in 1968. It's a crazy. I was reading about just Shala Bell's backstory, and they grew up together, and they fell in love, and it's actually because of her. He accepts the job as Galactus's herald to save her and her planet. And then later, Galactus eats her planet, and he's trying to get there and gets blocked. And he gives her some of the power to go back and help her planet, and at which point she's like a Silver Surfer, has the power cosmic. I guess she doesn't. She's not a herald, but she has the power cosmic.
Is that an alternate universe version, or is that a legit?
That is in the main canon. There is another version in the Earth-X reality where she's something else, something to do with Reed Richards and Galactus. I don't know. Of course, it's crazy comics, but their love history is as big and expansive as like Franklin Richards and Sue Storm or Peter Parker and Mary Jane. Like, they've had a long, long relationship in the comics since 1968. Let's start with Julia Garner. You may know her. She's best known for Ozark, playing Ruth in all the seasons of Ozark. Rugs.
Right.
Yeah.
Jennifer Garner?
Not Jennifer Garner and not Julia Carpenter. It's Julia Garner. She has won an Emmy, and she kind of fits the rest of the cast. She's another one of these kind of rising stars. Anthony, what do you think about this whole pick and them using this female Harold Silver Surfer?
I like that they're at least they're pulling a character from the comics, and they're not going Norrin Radd was a female,
right?
You know, so whatever, it's fine. I don't really know anything about this actress. I don't even know much about the character she's playing, per se.
I don't think a lot of people do. They could do whatever they want with this.
Yeah, so they're gonna do whatever they want. Yeah. I'm just happy that, you know, they went with, we don't need to change the sex on Norrin Radd. Let's just get another character that was associated with Norrin Radd and do something different. Fuck it, whatever.
I mean, it's smart, because then it's implying that there is a Norrin Radd still somewhere in the MCU. Ruggs, what do you think about all this?
It doesn't bother me like at all. Like, just like Anthony said, they're using something from the comics, but I'm sure that's not going to adhere to the comics. I'm sure they're going to do their own thing.
Yeah.
And they're going to take liberties and whatever. As is, if you're a Silver Surfer guy, person who loves Silver Surfer, you're going to be disappointed, I think, a little bit. I mean, that's just the honest thing to say. You're not expecting Shia Ball as the character that they're going to bring to life. But whatever, I'm sure we'll see what it is when it comes out. You know, like, it is what it is. We know this is Marvel's page book. And if you listen to, if you've heard about that shareholders meeting, a lot of people were not happy with Disney.
They
so,
won the proxy war, though. Nelson Peltz tried. Yeah. I believe they had the vote.
Well, yeah, he still got pull. So
did you see that one quote from Nelson Peltz? He was like, I don't know why we need a Marvel that's all women. Like, I don't even know what
he doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about.
He's like 92
about.
Years old. I don't know what
he just wants
talking.
To make money.
Who is this guy again? Refreshment.
This
Nelson
is a guy
Peltz
who is a stockholder. He was trying on with Perlmutter behind him, backing him. He was trying to get board seats on the board to kind of gain control and get rid of, like, Bob Iger and get, like, Perlmutter and back.
So, Bob Iger still got a lot of pull. He still can
he's the
move
guy.
Mountains.
He's still the guy, bro.
So, even though Peltz has got a lot of money invested, and he was even going to try and bring some more investors in.
Yeah.
Like, he got some Wall Street investors, like, on board with him to kind of swing their weight around to Disney and, like, kind of force them to, like, give him chairs on the board. But, you can't.
Iger had, like, George Lucas, in his corner, and the vote was overwhelmingly for Bob Iger.
Yeah.
So
Iger was able to, like, muscle him back out. But this is, that's not the, so they did one, they win the proxy war. Yeah. But what happened was, Disney is so contentious right now that when they were taking usually when you take shareholder calls, you actually talk to real people and they ask you questions and you got to, like, answer them.
Right.
But they vetted all the calls.
Oh, shit.
And they had even the voice do it in an AI calm voice.
Oh, man.
So it didn't sound angry at them or anything.
Oh, man.
And they had scripted answers back.
Wow.
To these calls. So they.
Oh, they knew what was coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they, like. Yeah. And yeah, they got in a lot of the calls, even though that they had to filter a lot of the worst ones, they still had terrible calls in there. Mm. So, yeah, they still had, like, very critical calls in there. So,
I mean, I guess that wasn't as big of a threat as I was thinking. So it's just a little threat that easily got taken care of.
Well, and the stock went down.
Yeah.
Yeah. It plummeted after Peltz was going up when it looked like Peltz was going to go in. And then it immediately after they did that meeting and they had fuck all to show off, it just fucking torpedoed down. So, I mean, it'll come back up. It's just a reaction to the meeting, but
right.
That gives you a little bit of, like, what the shareholders are thinking.
When was this?
This was, like, last week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a public thing. You could have watched it on TV.
Oh, really?
Someone was streaming it.
Yeah. Disney's still on shaky ground, but they held on to Iger and didn't go backwards.
I was like, oh, this is not, let me listen to it.
That's crazy. Was it boring or was it interesting?
It was a lot of Bob Iger, like, saying, oh, we're going to do great things.
Everything's fine.
Blah, blah, blah. Everything's fine. Yeah.
So another weird story connected to this, speaking of Norrin Rad, original Silver Surfer, Lakeith Stanfield posted this thing on Instagram and deleted it right away. He posted the announcement of Julia Garner getting this role with the text saying, "I thought it was going to be me, but IG." What does IG stand
for? Instagram.
No, but that's what he posted on Instagram.
Yeah, I don't know.
The post is thought it was going to be me, but IG. I don't know what that means. And then deleted it, leading many to speculate that maybe he didn't lose out on the role and he still has the role and he's going to be Norrin Rad in the MCU, which I thought it was weird. Why would you post that and then remove it?
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm down with that.
Yeah, Lakeith's a good actor.
I think he'd be great as Norrin Rad Silver Surfer.
I think he'd be rad.
He'd be rad. 2Ds. And then the other rumor I saw is possibly this movie will take place in an alternate universe, like a retro futuristic 60s kind of universe. And maybe that's why it's Shia LaBeouf, not Norrin Rad. I don't know. But that.
Well, you could also use that to explain why we've never seen them.
Yes.
In an alternate universe.
Yes.
And then they get transported to our universe.
Yes. Something like the space race is going to be a big part of it. But that would make sense. That would make sense why we haven't seen them. I would be okay with that. I love this, the 60s aesthetic. They put out another illustration of Johnny Storm, Joseph Quinn as Johnny Storm for four day. But I'd love the 60s time setting. So it should be exciting. It's a good cast. They still need a Galactus, and apparently Javier Bardem is still like in the top running for that role. We will find out what happens when they announce it. Listener, let us know your thoughts. Join this conversation. Join our Facebook group. It's called Jock and Nerd Nation.
Jock and Nerd.
It's a closed, exclusive group just for you to geek out in there. Leave your thoughts, spoiler threads, lots of
pull
fun
your dick
things.
Out.
You can whip it out. All you got to do is answer a question to say you agree to the rules. And pulling your dick out, technically not in the rules. So,
and you could have greeted Imran a happy 72nd birthday.
Oh, we'll get to that. Yes, in News from the Nation, that was lovely.
Oh,
there was
really?
There's a lot of fun stuff. Girl, oh, God. All right, let's get to our first.
What did you just say right there?
I said there's a lot of fun stuff going on.
No, what was that thingy that? That noise that came out of your mouth. Oh, God.
I think I did what Donald Trump does all the time when he's trying to talk. China and Russia.
Did you say like, oh, my God? Or
America, what was that? Burabar.
I think he said moving on or going on.
I said it like Conor McGregor in Roadhouse. Is what happened.
Okay, done. Let's go, fellas.
Our first review. Okay, let's get to the first review. Fuckers. Invincible Season 2.
Any music?
Two.
Plays music.
No.
You have any music?
No, I got nothing. Damn it. I'll give you this.
Some motherfuckers are always trying to ice skate uphill.
Somehow that relates. Figure it out.
No.
Okay.
It doesn't work.
Anyways, Invincible Season 2, second half, has completed airing. It's all the last five episodes, 5 through 8, with the finale coming out. Anthony.
Yes.
So we didn't talk about episode 7. Why don't you catch us up? On kind of what happens in part 2 up until this finale episode, if you can.
Oh, God. I can't do that.
Come on. What is the story so far? What have we seen?
The story so far? Okay. So, thus far, Invincible is dealing with being a superhero while in college and having a girlfriend.
Yeah.
He's juggling that. He's juggling the fact, you know, that his dad in the first season left him, but now he's met his dad and he's got a brother and it's... Mom is dealing with the fact that she's married to a sociopath. Then you've got Invincible's dad, Omni-Man, having a change of heart and potentially getting executed. And you have Angstrom Levy, who we met in the first episode of season 2, who got involved into a terrible accident due to Invincible and has become a psychopath and is plotting to kill him. And there's Martians.
Yeah, there's Martians.
There's all sorts of other shit, too. There's lots of side storylines.
Yes, with side characters. He went underwater and fought some shit. Donald finds out he's a cyborg.
Lots of other things happening.
The Guardians are fighting things.
Yeah, blah, 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 blah.
A lot of them die. The one Guardian runs off because Duplicate was apparently killed.
What is his name?
The Immortal.
The Immortal, yeah, yeah.
The Immortal goes off, and Rex gets fucking wounded, but doesn't die, and the shrinky lady comes back. That's where we are. Lots going on. this this back half kind of bookended with this Angstrom Levy storyline, as he's missing for many episodes and shows up at the very end of the last one at Mark's house holding the mom and the brother hostage. And that's kind of where we pick up. I think it's really interesting when they mention how in every other universe Angstrom Levy has seen, Mark teams up with Nolan to take over.
Well, he's got the memories of all the Langstrom Levies.
Yes.
In his brain.
Because of the accident.
Right.
And the accident being like he was actually trying to help things and Mark misunderstood and explodes. He's been trying to get fixed. He can't fix himself. But in every other dimension, Mark goes evil, except for this one. This Mark is very special that he's resisted his father. And even his father has having a change of heart. So I don't know. Let's just discuss kind of what happens in this finale. And Ruggs, how are you feeling? How have you enjoyed this episode, the season so far?
It's not going. I mean, it's going where it should go because it's following the comics somewhat.
Yes.
So I don't know if they're pacing it exactly the same way. I think that the comics expand on a few story items a little more and diminish the other ones. They're kind of flipping it a little bit, but I feel like it's fine. I feel like it's pretty true to the comics. It feels like the comics, and I feel like they're doing a pretty good job overall.
You know, I've not read the comics, but I've seen a lot of panels especially from this last episode that they pulled right from the comics. But I'm glad I didn't read the comics. I'm going to read them at some point later. But the episode begins with Nolan. They let him get better because at least they're going to give him an honorable execution. They want him to get back to full strength. So he's killing all these military dudes violently. It's great. And Clegg comes in. He's like, all right, you're fit to die now. It's kind of funny. And then we cut right to Mark confronting Angstrom Levy, who is holding his mom by the neck, squeezing really hard. It's the passion and the crazy shit that happens in this episode is great. And we see Angstrom use his portaling universe powers as he kind of evades Mark and teases him and fights him. And we see some really fun fucking universes and some kind of crazy surprises in these universes. Anthony, what'd you think about this whole situation, Mark trying to get to Angstrom and this him really having a hard time even getting to him physically?
Yeah, I mean, I was white knuckle this entire time.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought this whole part of the episode was executed really well. A couple things. First off, Angstrom Levy is a great villain.
Yeah.
Because you can see his point of view, but he just takes it too far.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like he wants revenge because has all the memories of all the marks that are diabolical. So he just can't. And like, he's fighting with that because there is a part of him that does remember Mark trying to save him.
Right.
But there's too many other memories of this diabolical Mark and Omni-Man. So he's the hero in his own mind.
Right.
Like he's been plotting this. So he's 20 steps ahead of Mark.
Yeah.
Right. You know, he's using the portals, but he's also like, you can't root for him because he's clearly evil. You know, he breaks fucking Mark's mom's arm. He's threatening to kill the baby. He's slapping her around. I mean, this episode is brutal violence on women.
Yeah.
And it's great. I mean, it's not great. Obviously, I'm not saying violence on women is great, but it's just, there's so much tension there that I was just like, this is awesome. Like, this is such a good. And then what it does is obviously later on, it pushes Mark to his breaking point where he just finally gets a hold of him and unleashes, because Angstrom Levy has also used his multiversal abilities to power himself up.
Yeah.
And then Mark obviously loses control and kind of becomes like his father and fucking kills the guy and then regrets it, which we can talk about. The one thing, though, I know I heard in reading the comics or in the comparing to the comics is, so, you know, he obviously feels bad about killing Angstrom Levy because he feels like he's lost control. And he's becoming one step closer to his dad, you know, right? And they kept trying to say, like, you know, he had no choice. He had to do it. And I think as a viewer, I bet you definitely feel like he has no choice.
Yeah.
Like he had to do that. Yeah. So you kind of feel like, why is he all sad about it?
Yeah.
Apparently in the comics, the situation is different. He goes crazy and he kills, remember that scientist that was making robots with
D.A. Sinclair, who
Sinclair.
It used to be Ezra Miller. They recast him for this season. Yeah.
So D.A. Sinclair, he, in the comics, apparently he goes crazy and kills one of those robots that's also part human.
Yeah.
And he feels really bad about it because the human inside, the conscious human inside, had no control, like wasn't able to do anything, like was like, please stop, I don't want to die.
Huh.
But like he couldn't stop himself because the robot was taken over.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit more of a moral. I think they apparently in the comics is a little bit more gray in terms of like, did he have to kill him or not? Whereas here, obviously, they try to play it as gray, but it doesn't seem as gray as it's played.
Is that better or worse?
You know what? I think this way it's a little cleaner. It's a little more focused. And like that whole.
Well, but the thing is like in this one, you could say, well, why does he feel bad? He had to kill him.
Right, because
Angstrom was never going to stop.
But that gives him like that Peter Parker, like everybody can be saved type thing.
Yeah. They totally do the Peter Parker. And I loved it. Don't get me wrong. I loved it.
Yeah.
I think that's what they're going for.
I think that in the comics, they wanted to play with that a little bit more where it was morally ambiguous. But
right.
But I don't know. I think it works pretty good. I wasn't mad at it. I also really like this episode. That whole section was really cool and fun and entertaining. And you don't see too many, like Marvel can't do this. DC's not.
No, absolutely not. This is only where you're going to get
You're only going to get it on Amazon.
Yeah.
Like on Amazon shows are the only ones that really, maybe a Netflix show, but like, I don't know. I haven't seen
it. It's not as, they take the sterilization out of it, right? They make it, okay, this is what it would really be like.
I mean, he was covered in blood that was dripping. It was fucking shocking. So I thought it worked well because of the way they set it up, right? He's there. Yeah. He's threatening his family. And when he finally does say something about, I'm going to kill your mom and the brother, that's what sets Mark off. And while they're fighting, he tells him, Angstrom Levy, I've also been enhanced by other universes to take because I want to kill you with my bare hands. And he beats him down. He actually has him beat for a bit. So I'm thinking this guy, I can't hold back anymore. This guy's augmented himself. This is a problem. But
well, he even says that I've been holding back.
So the title of the episode is I Thought You Were Stronger. And that whole sequence after he's just covered in blood and he's trying to rationalize what the fuck just happened. He couldn't stop himself. He says, I thought you were stronger. And like he's talking to Angstrom Levy, but he's also talking to himself in terms of restraint.
He's trying to justify what happened.
Yeah. But you're right. Part of me is like, he was going to kill you. He was going to kill your mom. Maybe you had to kill him. This guy was not going to stop. He's on a vendetta. Turning into your father also at the same time, which is what
I think it's mostly, it's more, don't get me wrong. I like the scene. I think it's more that he felt like he lost control. Like,
yes,
he probably knew he had to kill him, but he, in that moment, he was so blind with rage
that
he lost who he was.
Maybe it was too easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also when he's killing him, I'm like, bro, you're going to be stuck in this dimension. What the fuck are you doing? Slow your roll. I was like, what are you doing? You got to stop. You can't, you don't have a portal.
And before we get to that, I do have to mention it was fun seeing the multiversal stuff.
Oh, let's talk about that.
Spider-Man.
Yes. So let's talk about that. The first universe we see is a Jurassic World where I guess the dinos never went extinct and they talk. And that was fun. And he's like, oh, a sapien. I haven't seen one of those in a while.
Ooh, it flies.
It flies. So they're all fighting over him. That was great. Then we get portaled to fucking this universe where there's Agent Spider, a Spider-Man-like character, fighting a Dr. Octopus-type character. His name
is Professor Ock.
Yeah. Agent Spider, voiced by Josh Keaton, who voiced Spider-Man and Spectacular Spider-Man. I love the little line. He's like, I know you came out of a portal and multiverse. I'm a good guy. I know all about multiverses, especially lately. Like, that was great. They couldn't use... I know in the comics it is Spider-Man, and then they go and like the Avengers show up at one point, but apparently they didn't tell Marvel at all they were doing this, and I think it's different enough that they could get around it. And then we get like a montage. Oh, and then he goes to like a zombie land, like a Walking Dead Easter egg. Yeah, that was great.
It is a Walking Dead, yep.
And then we go to like a whole montage of universes where he's just talking to like campers, which is kind of funny.
There's also a Batman universe at one point.
Yes, he's talking to Batman off screen. He's like, I get it. The man dressed like a bat. The name's a little lazy. Next time. But then also I really, the scenes that we saw from Levy's point of view of all the marks that are evil, that when he's chopping the heads off with his hands, just walking casually, he kills his son
right in front of him. Oh my God. Yeah.
So I get that Levy's like, this is, he also says this is the only universe where the brother exists. So this is a very special universe, but that shit was fucking, that was wild and brutal.
No, I mean that's why I think it makes Levy, you know, an interesting villain, because you get why he is the way he is. He's seen
it all.
Horrible things, and he's flooded with the memories of all his variants seeing these things. So you get it, but then you're also like, but fuck you, man, you're killing this innocent lady. Like, you broke her arm.
Snaps her arm.
This isn't that mark.
Yeah.
But you could see why he can't rationalize that.
Yeah, he was fighting
everyone. The best villains are the ones that think they're the hero in their own story, and you totally get that with this
and
guy.
She says that to him to try to get to him. She's like, you're just mad because this is the one universe where you're the bad guy and Mark's the good guy, right? Now, question, they killed that one, Levy. Are all the variants still alive in the other universes?
That's what happened in that explosion in the first episode. All the variants were there, and they were doing a knowledge share in the machine.
Did they all die? And they all died. So there's no more Levies anywhere.
Right.
No, there could be another Levy. I think there could be another Levy. I don't know. I feel like there's an infinite multiverses, isn't there?
Yeah, I feel like there could be another Levy. He only had, what, like, maybe like 10, 11 Levies? Like, there's got to be more.
I thought, and I'd have to rewatch the first episode, I thought they got every Levy, and they were doing a whole knowledge share thing.
Okay, yeah, possibly. But
I'll slap you right now.
There's somewhere Angstrom Levy's. I'm gonna reach out and slap someone. We cut actually real quick while Mark is in the wasteland, just covered in blood. We see Alan, who we saw in the last episode, fight Anissa and kind of pretend to be captured. And that is kind of a funny scene where he's walking by and he contacts him, Nolan telepathically. He's like, remember me? I'm here for you. Talk soon. And then while I'm like, how the fuck are you going to get out of here? A fucking portal shows up and the Guardians from 20 years in the future pop out.
Love this too.
Love this. And they tell him, they're trying not to fuck up the time stream. They're like, yeah, things went bad after you left, but we're going to send you home. And right before he leaves, Adam, the older Adam Eve, runs up to him and just tells him what her heart feels. She's like, I've always loved you. You need to tell that Eve something so that she can go on with her life. And secretly, the whole Amber Mark thing, I was rooting. I was like, you can't have an Earth girlfriend. Like, it's not fair to Amber.
But
I would love these two to hook up.
But like, is he in love with her?
I wrote down love triangle. I think he loves both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Amber, really? I think he in the season one, he was into her first.
Yeah.
He was into, into what's her name?
Adam.
Not Amber.
Eve.
Adam Eve. Eve, yeah. Yeah. And then Amber, like Adam Eve, I think is actually his real first love. And she's the only one that actually can understand
him. Yes.
We'll get to that scene later.
She was with Rex, right?
She was with Rex.
Yes,
yeah.
And then they broke up.
The other key line, though, in that thing before she tells him he loves him, he's like, do I get out of here?
Oh.
He's like, yeah. He's like, how long would you have been here? Something along the lines of like, how long have you been here? Or would I get out of here? He's like, yeah, you'd have been here for 20 years and you wouldn't have liked what you became.
Yeah. So, and then he says in another universe, you did survive this.
Right.
And you wouldn't like me. What does that mean?
Yeah,
that's another version.
No, in this universe.
Oh.
If they didn't save him, if they let it play out in this universe, he would have survived, but he would have gone to a really dark place.
So they're changing that.
They're saving this time stream by going they're coming back from the future and taking him out of this. Otherwise it would have been really bad.
Changing the future. Oh, it's very Terminator. Yeah.
Right.
That was great. And I was like, I can't believe she just told him that. You need to go talk to
But that leads to an awesome scene
Yeah.
where he then goes to her.
Yeah.
And he wants to tell her that he loves her.
Yeah, he's about to tell her.
But he's like, I can't. Like, I can't do it. But I'll like cry on your shoulder. Like, and she's like, you don't deserve this.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great line. She says it twice. You don't deserve this. And he's like, touches her hand and moves away. But I was like,
well, it's a Peter Parker thing too,
yeah,
right?
It's like
all the people I become close with are put in danger. So I can't do it. Like, it's actually selfish of me to confess my love to these people.
Like, you can't have any relationship with anybody if you're in this position. They're all going to be in danger. But at least Eve can, she's got powers. So she's got a better chance. But he pulls back and restrains himself. Yeah. So I was like, I was literally like, is he going to say it? What's he going to tell her? Are you going to tell her? But now it's not fair to Eve because he knows what's in her heart.
Right.
What she's carrying around. And he's got to put closure to that. At some point.
Yeah. It's good. It's good fucking writing.
Oh, my God. It was so good. So before that, Mark goes home. He finds his mom.
She's fucked up.
Her arm is fucked up. Not a scratch.
Her eye is fucked up.
Oh, yeah. Both of them have the same eye fucked up. And I think Nolan does, too. Like, they all have the same swollen eye. Not a scratch on the kid, Oliver. And I was waiting for this kid to show some powers or maybe he's strong or something. But that doesn't really happen. He's still afraid of turning into his father. Then we cut to the immortal in a shack in the Arctic somewhere fishing, and fucking duplicate is there. And you'll notice it says zero on her. She's the original duplicate, and she confesses to living through a clone because she was just tired of dying all the time. And she's like, are you sorry? Can you forgive me? He's like, it doesn't matter. And he just hugs her. I was like, oh, shit. That was crazy. I did not expect that. Then we cut to this random weird gag they've been doing. They did it last season too. These two women, like Indiana Jones Tomb Raider types, and they find this tomb her dad is there. Dead. That was the guy we saw last season going into this tomb, and they release an Egyptian god. And this was just fucking hilarious because he comes out. He's like, oh, you're both women. He's like, well, that's going to be a problem. I can only reincarnate into a man.
I forgot that scene even.
Right. Happened. And I was like, what the fuck is this? Ruggs, can you explain this? What is this? Well, I don't understand.
I don't know. I don't have an explanation for this.
I was like, what? They did. There was one scene of the dad going and finding this god last season. I don't understand what this is.
No. Well, my knowledge of Invincible is sporadic volumes that I bought. I don't have all of the continuity, so I don't know where this fits in.
I feel like that god is a character that he fights eventually, but I was like, what the fuck is this? That was just weird.
I would assume so, yeah. But it's pretty hilarious.
And then we get a montage of Mark flying real fast, breaking the sound barrier and thinking about his dad.
They're both supers, by the way, those girls.
They are?
Yeah, one of them lifted up a door with, held it up.
Whoa. What the fuck is this? I don't know who they were. He goes...
So this is Invincible, though. Invincible usually has... If anything, that might be like one of the issues I have is there just so many storylines to follow at times.
I'll agree. I think overall there seems to be so many things happening and some things get the short shrift and then you just tack on this thing with these Tomb Raiders. I don't get it. He goes to fly over to Amber and she's on the ground. He's spying on her and doesn't talk to her. Very Spider-Man like, very Andrew Garfield Spider-Man like. Mm-hmm. And then he goes to talk to his mom and tells her he wants to quit college because it's pointless. I agree.
It is.
I agree with
it
this.
Is.
You don't need fucking college.
You have to agree with him.
What the fuck, dude? You're a superhero.
And it's holding him back from being the superhero he has. Going to college and developing all these relationships is a selfish decision. And he finally realizes he's got to be better.
Well,
otherwise he's going to have more situations like this.
Can Cecil pay him? Like, how would you make money? I was like, just work for Cecil. Doesn't he pay people? Doesn't he pay the Guardians or you just live there?
But it's a tragedy, though, because he's stuck now living this life. He just wants to be a kid. It's a Spider-Man thing.
Well, the last two episodes where him and Amber are trying to go on a date and they just can't. Like, I mean, shit happens.
You notice he flies by her and he could say something to her, but he doesn't.
Yeah. And she kind of sensed him. But like we saw last episode, Anissa came down, grabbed her by the throat, almost fucking popped her head off.
Right, exactly.
Right, and that whole Anissa thing was fantastic because we're going to tangent off to that part, but while he's getting beat the whole time in my head, I'm like, Cecil, I'm like, Mark, just say you'll fucking do it. You don't have to do it. Just say you'll fucking do the job so she'll leave you alone. She's helping him save people and shit. And he's like, no, I'm not going to say it. I'm like, you fucking stubborn asshole. But what makes him sets him apart, right? It's what makes him Peter Parker. He's going to do the right thing.
I mean, he's got to do, but there's the edge to him. He's Peter Parker, but he's got the Omni-Man edge.
He's got the
to
darkness
him.
In
him. Like, you could take any Dan Slott comics and hold them up to this story, and you could just see how shitty his writing is.
I love the random Dan Slott.
You got to put in a Dan Slott.
Because we're talking about Spider-Man, how Spider-Man like is, and like Dan Slott actually writes Spider-Man, and another comic is more Spider-Man than his writing.
Mark is a lot more Spider-Man than some of the Spider-Man I read. Like, it's straight up like hardcore Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Okay, so then we get that whole Eve and Mark meeting, and then we finally finish with Alan and Nolan talking telepathically through the cells up in that prison, and Nolan confesses, I'm sorry for what I did, actually. I regret my actions against the humans, and I kind of miss my wife. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And then it ends there. Was there a post-credit? Was there a credit scene?
That was it,
right? They didn't do that this time. So this is his redemption arc also.
It's crazy because like at the end of season one, I was like, this guy's the worst person in the world.
Speech and the beatdown.
And I still, you know, he's still going to have to pay for everything he's done.
Yeah.
But like, I'm kind of rooting for his redemption.
They turn you around on this man who has done heinous things, murdered millions.
It's like the Game of Thrones. With the brother.
Yeah. What was his name?
Cersei's brother.
Oh, the Hand of the King.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy. Where it's like, this guy is a despicable human.
Yeah.
But now I'm rooting for
him. You're rooting for him. Yeah.
The Kingslayer. That's
okay. Kingslayer. King, yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy. So
Jamie Lannister.
Yeah.
Right.
But they do that.
Omni-Man was 10 times worse. He was fucking killing people brutally.
I mean, I still remember the moment in this season when he shows up on the planet and he's just there and he's like, this is my new wife. This is your brother. I was like, what the fuck, bro? This is crazy. And the whole arc, these character journeys have been incredible throughout the two seasons.
Well, it's interesting. Nolan's interesting because he was living his whole life thinking that when the time came that
his son
was just going to fall into place. And, you know, according to Langstrom, that's what he has done every single time.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. So
this
completely fucked him up.
Yeah.
100%.
And yeah, so you know that in every other reality, they just fucking team up and they fuck shit up.
I mean, Levy even says there's some realities where Debbie joins him too, and she's on his side too, which is fucking crazy. Right. But what is so special about this Mark? It's so crazy.
Well, it's good writing, right? Because
you can
get really lazy with the multiversal stuff and just say, well, none of this matters because you can get another one. But they go out of their way to make sure, hey, this is a different Mark, and he's the only one.
I don't know if they get into it, if there is a catalyst for him being different. If there's some kind of experience that happens, or is it just maybe his DNA sequence is more
It's the one anomaly out of all of them.
Right.
I did think this is a great use of the multiverse, you know, even better than in some Marvel fucking things we've been seeing. And it's interesting that they're doing the same thing. But yeah, this the blood, the gore, the shocks. I also love back to the episode 7, that whole Comic-Con bit where they're talking about animation and how they cheat in animation and they're doing it. And they're showing you how they cheat and you see it later. And it was fucking fantastic. That's something you can't do in the comic book, right? That is an addition, and it was fucking brilliant.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. It was like a little bit of a meta thing, so it was fun. Good for a laugh. The show is very entertaining, and I think it's very solid, and I do enjoy it. And I also think it's one of the rare things that resemble the comic books and actually kind of give you a truncated version of like a lot of issues.
Yeah.
And you get the idea of what Invincible's about. So,
yeah, no, that's my only nitpick is sometimes there's a little too many things going on. But overall, it's been consistent. It's been the voice acting, the writing, the voice acting is incredible. Like,
there was episodes where I was like almost like getting misty.
Yeah. Yeah, the emotion in this, their voice acting gets you. And I already said how, like, it's so gory. There are parts that I have, like, makes me uncomfortable, even though it's a 2D fucking cartoon. Like, I can't believe it accomplishes all this and it's fucking solid. And unfortunately, you probably have to wait another fucking 3 years before.
Because animation is hard.
They give us more episodes.
Like, I don't understand this. I really don't. I feel like this is just a bullshit excuse. Because when we were kids.
Oh, they were cranking out like.
There was like 22 episodes every year.
But that animation was a little shoddy too. Come on. Wasn't the greatest.
But still. Those were
22 minute episodes. These are hour long, sometimes plus.
Yeah, I guess.
But it's not the craziest art, right? So you'd think they could speed this along here and there. I don't know.
You would think the technology has also evolved where you can create this faster.
So I think that's the commentary in that last episode at the Comic-Con is what they were reacting to. People going like, why'd you split this up? Why is it taking too long? What, like,
heard it was COVID that was a big part.
Was it? Probably. But like, yeah. Your animator at home, just fucking draw the shot. I don't know, even in COVID. But the reaction was clearly...
I call bullshit. But
that
I'm sorry.
Was, yeah, that was the part of the Comic-Con. It was clearly a commentary on, like, but sometimes...
Like, SpongeBob has 7,000 episodes.
Yeah. But they're like, we cheat in certain areas to make other parts look really good. So, like, I don't know. Just do that. I don't know. Recycle the background. Nobody's going to care. Nobody's going to notice. All right. Let's wrap this up. Final thoughts. Rate it. Rank it maybe against the first season. Anthony...
It's tough because I don't remember all the episodes in the first season. I'm just going to rank the finales.
Okay.
I think the season one finale is probably a little better because it's the dad versus the son.
Yeah.
But this is, this is almost right up there. I mean, I was, like I said earlier, white knuckled the entire time Angstrom Levy was threatening his family. And they're not afraid to take, they're not afraid to take it further and have him punch her and fucking break her arm and really make you go, oh, there's no doubt I fucking hate this guy.
Yeah.
Really good episode, really good season overall. You know, Invincible and the Boys, I mean, it's just the two things Amazon's putting out that are comic book related, just keep hitting. So I overall Invincible in 8.5, 9 out of 10, the only nitpick I have is what we stated earlier.
Absolutely.
A lot to follow sometimes.
You, like, watching that whole confrontation, you did not know what was going to happen. Like, it's crazy.
That's the thing. There's a level of unpredictability.
Yeah. I'm like, this is a cartoon. And I'm like, I don't know.
I don't know the comic.
Right. Right. Me neither. Rugs, what do you think? Oh, also, I love how they showed the speech from the last season finale again, because that speech was fucking wild when you think about what all the shit he was saying. Everyone you love will be gone. These people are nothing. From that to where he is now. Rugs, what would you give it?
I feel like the show gives you a lot to chew on.
Yeah.
And it hits all these emotional notes. Character is so defined and so... It's a lot like Peter Parker, so it's a little derivative. But it is great drama. And I feel like you're getting your money's worth. It's easily 8.5. Easily 8.5. Compared to last time, I think the last one was a little bit more epic because it's father versus son and there was so much on the line there. But this one hits a lot of emotional notes too. I mean, the tragedy of his relationship and how he's come to this realization that his life is basically like in service to everybody but himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the Spider-Man curse.
That's the hero's. That's the hero's conundrum.
Yeah, it's no. It's not like Tom Holland Spider-Man.
Yes.
Where my friends didn't get into college. Okay. Can you fix the universe?
You selfish prick.
Yeah.
Dude, I fucking love this show. I'm gonna use this.
I fucking loved it.
Solid writing. They're doing the best superhero shit on television right now. I love the first season and this season. I love it just as much. I'm just gonna go 10 out of 10. Fuck it. Overall, the experience of this whole journey is absolutely a 10 out of 10. And I just wish there was more and they'd make them quicker.
I respect that.
But you're right. The Boys and Invincible is outshining everything.
Yeah, Amazon Prime puts out the best
because they can take these risks.
They put out the best comic book shit.
Yeah, who would have thought? I never thought that it would be there.
I think they put out the best comic book dramas.
Yeah.
Like the dramatic aspect of these things are very good. And they're funny too.
Right.
So they got both of those things going.
The amount of emotional investment you have because they're putting the drama is so good is really what's key. And then the humor, but also the gratuitous violence. So they have their own. Both shows have this that on the menu, which is not what you're not going to get that with Marvel or DC. They can always
they complement each other very well.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know why? We cannot discount the involvement of producers. Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, his buddy, they produce both of these shows. You know, one, you have Robert Kirkman material, and then over there you got fucking, what's his name? Who wrote that shit? Garth Ennis.
Garth Ennis, yeah.
But the common denominator is Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg producing these shows. They are producing two of the fucking greatest superhero things on TV right now. So give them more things, or maybe not. Have them focus on this. More Invincible. all right, we'll take a quick break here, play some promos, and we're going to come back and talk about a monkey. We're going to talk about a man. We're going to talk about Monkey Man right after this.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hey there, everyone. Brian here, host of TV Trivia Pod. It's a trivia-style podcast focusing on TV and movies. Listen in for questions like, what's the name of Michael Scott's screenplay? What do you say to view the Marauder's map? And what's everyone eating in the post-credit scene of Avengers? Play along to TV Trivia Pod anywhere you get podcasts. And stay tuned for more trivia!
What's up, Jock and Nerd Nation? This is Logan at Mostly Superheroes, a podcast that was partly inspired by the Jock and Nerd podcast. We talk about a lot of the same stuff, MCU, DC heavy, with other content that comes out of HBO Max, Amazon Prime, Netflix, and more. We're committing to doing something new every day in 2021, so come join the fun, check out the schedule. Find us at mostlysuperheroes.com and enjoy the rest of the show.
Doc and Nerd.
Listener, if you enjoy hanging out with us every week, if we've made you chuckle, this is a great time to join our Patreon fan club, visit jockandnerd.com/Patreon.
Jock and Nerd!
There is a link in the episode description, and you can give back all the hilarity and nonsense and silliness. On a monthly or annual basis, you can support us and get things like access to an exclusive podcast feed where the shows come out early. Instant reactions to movies are posted the minute we see them right out of the theater. Lots of bonus movie reviews, lots of bonus content. You can join us on our monthly Discord hangouts. April 2024 hangout will be Thursday, April 18th. Put it in your calendars. You can pick any movie for us to watch and review. You can get an exclusive t-shirt, lots of fun stuff over at jockandnerd.com/Patreon. Check it out. Okay, second review. It's a movie review. We are going to be reviewing the movie called Monkey Man. Here's your spoilers.
Strap yourselves in, you fucks. Spoiler time.
Little movie called Monkey Man. I'm very excited for this one. Why? Well, it's Dev Patel's directorial debut. It's a big deal.
We've all been waiting for this.
I can't. The minute I saw this trailer, I was like, holy fuck, look at this.
Wait, that's the only reason you're excited for it? Because of Dev Patel's directorial debut? Well, are there other factors involved here?
Well, maybe. Maybe there's some other factors. We'll get into it. There might be some other things. Currently on the Rotten Tomatoes, last week it was at, before it was released, it was at 93%. A week ago, exactly today, Tomato Meter, 88%. More reviews have come in. 7.1 out of 10. Audience giving it an 83%. This movie was made for kind of a small budget of $10 million. And it opens domestically to $10 million. This was a really bad weekend for theaters. It opened number two behind Godzilla X Kong. It just made another, it made $33 million, which was like a 65% drop or something.
60%.
So that was number one at $33 million, and then Monkey Man at number two at $10 million, and the others were like $9 million and $8 million. So, but you know what? it made its fucking money back. So worldwide, sitting at $12 million, I think it can eke out a little profit. I think it's not a bad opening. I was hoping for a little bit more, but they're breaking even so far. Like I said, this movie is directed by and co-produced by Dev Patel and starring in his directorial debut. And he also helped write the screenplay with Paul Anguinella and John Coley. Dev Patel, you may know from some such things as Slumdog Millionaire when he was really young. He's been in a movie called Lion, The Green Knight. You guys seen any Dev Patel movies? I feel like everybody...
He was in Skins.
Oh, he was in Skins.
And something about his name. I forgot the name of the movie, but...
Oh, he was in Hotel Mumbai, which is a really good movie also. Anyways, starring... He's in the movie starring Dev Patel's brown guy. The only non-brown guy you need to know for this is Charlton Copley.
Right.
Who has a small role. You got a dude named Pitobash. Great name. That's his whole name. Just one name. Pitobash, who plays Alfonso, who's like his sidekick guy for a little bit. And then other people like Sikandar Khair playing the bad guy, Detective Rana Singh, and Ashwini Kalsakar playing Queenie. You have Sobhita Dhulipala as one of the workers, Sita. Really attractive workers at the, I guess it's a brothel. I don't know. It's a high-end brothel. And then Makran Deshpande playing Baba Shakti. Spiritual leader. We'll get into all these people and some other people. Lots of great names like Zakir Hussain and Jatin Malik.
Imran just Vipin loving Sharma. Even just saying the name.
Do you see a theme here, listener? Anyways, Anthony.
Yes.
What happens in this R-rated 1 hour, 55 minute movie? Is it 155? No, sorry. 2 hours, 1 minute. It's a little over 2 hours. 2 hour movie called Monkey Man.
This is about this dude who is, in street fights or in like a, not even a street fight, in a cage fighting thing, except not a cage, where he's an underground fighting scene and yes. dresses as a monkey and gets booked to lose all the time. But he's looking for a way to get revenge on these, on the, this policeman and this, this whole syndicate because of a terrible tragedy that happened to him as a child that he had to witness. And it's about his rise into, or his infiltration into this the syndicate, I would say, that's running everything in India. And it's your classic revenge story.
Yeah.
Yep. It's in a little different setting.
Yes, bringing Western audiences into India. Appreciated that. Anyways, you saw this most recently, I believe.
Saw it on Sunday.
Okay, just Sunday there afternoon. You go. Yeah, I saw this like Thursday right away when it came out.
Of course you did.
Yeah, the audience was it was small. It was one of the smaller theaters. They only had two showings for it, but it was like 50% full. It wasn't bad for the Thursday night. It was slow. What about your when you saw it on Sunday? A lot of people.
Oh, a lot of people. No. Come on, Imran. You know the answer to that.
Yeah.
All your cousins were there.
They had to be. Clearly, with the $10 million, that's all my family went to see it. That was it.
No, we were a smaller theater, probably 12 people there.
And, yeah, I mean...
I would say it's probably less than 10% full.
Well, and I think it's only getting put in like the smaller theaters. But listen, the fact, we'll get into it. The fact that this is in the theaters and all is a goddamn miracle. But before we get into that, Anthony, what did you think?
Stop with hyperbole.
Let me tell you, the behind the scenes shit, I'm going to tell you, is fucking crazy. And okay. I'm just, the fact that it's out is crazy. What did you think once it was over? How were you feeling?
So, you know, I love action movies. I love Dev Patel. No, I have no idea about Dev Patel. I love action movies. This had some good reviews coming in. I didn't know what the fuck I was really walking into. I didn't read any spoilers. I didn't know what the plot was. All I knew was what I'd seen in the trailers. I'll say that the action, especially at the end, is really good, despite some of the shaky cam stuff, which we can get into. But overall, I think it's a good, good first outing for an action movie for Dev Patel. I whenever there's action that makes me say things out loud, especially in a movie theater, you know it's pretty good action. Yeah. You know, there's the knife in the mouth.
Oh,
open the net. You know, there's a whole bunch of different scenes there where I'm like, oh, like, and so that it hit the ooh meter really, really well.
Yeah.
I will say that the second act, when he gets shot and is in the river and then gets saved by the trans people, that whole stuff, I think, drags really badly. I think the movie gets the movie kind of loses me a little bit. I think when it sticks to the revenge plot and the action, it's pretty solid, pretty good. When it gets to the political undertones and the religious stuff and all that, I feel like the movie kind of lost me a little bit.
Okay.
So I think it's a good, solid first effort, but not. I don't see the 80 to 90% Rotten Tomatoes, I'll be honest. I don't see that. Okay. I think it's a solid first effort, but the movie gets kind of boring in the middle. I mean, at times I was like, can this movie pick up? What's going on?
Yeah.
Like, and I feel like the political religious stuff that got thrown in kind of gets thrown in out of nowhere. Like, I get what they're going for, but at the end of the day, it's like it's more of a revenge flick than a, oh, we need to take down the system type thing. And I think they throw that in later and it doesn't work for me.
Okay. Okay. That's fair.
Yeah. I would agree.
Okay. What do you think, Rex?
Well, I actually liked a lot of this movie. I think that the performances were good. I think that the general setup is good. I mean, it's very familiar, but I do think the underground fighting and that all that stuff, we've seen it in a lot of other movies before, but there's a different flavor here. There's a little bit more cultural like ingenuity and novelty. So I think that that's all fun, but it, just like Anthony said, I said it in my review as well, that it drags, but I think that there is a disconnect because I didn't really understand what side, because like you have this conservative thing that's happening.
Right.
But, and I just don't know, like, is what exactly is their deal? Like what are these, where's the conflict? What isn't it? Aren't the people that are living in like the, aren't they conservative? They're not like, they're just people trying to get along. Like, I don't understand where all these new, what the ideas are or whatever. So I couldn't figure out like what exactly was going on other than there was an evil syndicate. And just like Anthony said, like, you don't need to complicate it more than that. So when you do, either you have to make it play very well and make everybody in on it too, or just don't put it in at all. Just stick to the revenge story, like Anthony said. So pretty much I'm echoing a lot of the things Anthony's saying. Now, there were also things that took me out of the film, you know, that some of the people had thick accents. I couldn't understand what they were saying.
Yeah,
so
sure.
So when I really wanted to get into the story, I was missing bits of it, and I would have liked to have seen that. And then there was another thing that Dev Patel kind of messed up, was like he was teasing this thing where he went into like the nightmare scene where he remembers everything.
Yeah, his flashbacks throughout the movie.
Yeah, where he went on an acid trip or whatever the fucking mushrooms.
Yeah, hallucinogenic something.
But he kind of gave it away a lot. So it wasn't a payoff when we were like, why are we now wasting all this? We already know it now. We've seen enough clips of it.
Mm.
That we got it, like his mom burned alive.
That was extra stuff. Like, you got the general gist, but then you saw the whole thing unfold where he was teasing it in the beginning. But
I think it doesn't pay off as well.
Yeah,
because we kind of already, we feel like that we've seen enough that we can move on to something else. So he had to have. I think he should have diminished all of these flash forwards a little bit more. So when you get to that, we understand, like, I don't know. I feel like that there was, he's a first time director. So he made a couple of kind of like clunky mistakes there that kind of like stopped the momentum.
Yeah.
But I do think that he did a great job with what he had. $10 million. This movie looks like it was at least a $30 million movie.
100%.
He did create like this whole aura of Monkey Man. But another thing is that he bleaches the monkey and then he puts it on for one
and
second.
He takes it off. He does take it off. Right. Well, because you got to see the man's face. Say, Peyton, come on.
But,
you're here for
that. We know it's him.
Is it him or a stuntman?
It would have been funny for him to wear it for at least one scene beating people up. It would have been
look, here, my overall thought, all the shit you guys have said is absolutely accurate and true, right? He's tackling a lot of things, religion, mythology, equality, politics. Did he bite off more than he could chew? Maybe a little bit. But despite that,
I fucking loved it.
This is an impressive, impressive first time debut. You feel his passion. You feel his heart and soul. He literally bled for this movie. You can feel it. I found it very stylish. It is bloody and violent as fuck. The action is kinetic. He has a cool swagger. Like, he's got the John Wick cool with kind of like a Raid style brutal revenge thriller. It's like a great origin of a vigilante story. We could talk about the inspirations, but I went in thinking Indian John Wick, and it's
an origin if the guy dies at the
end? Well, that was my question. Is he dead? I think he's dead. It's an origin and an end to the whole fucking story. But it's more like the Raid. Like, you see a lot of the Raid influence and Kill Bill and Old Boy and all these things. But he made a thing that, like, I feel kinship. He loves the things we love. He took a simple, like, John Wick is a simple story where, like, oh, they kill the wife, they kill the dog, he's going to kill everybody. He takes that, adds culture on top of it. A little bit of social messaging, a little bit to get Western audiences aware. I love that they were speaking Urdu. I could understand all that shit. So part of it may be, like, my ear is tuned to, like, the thick Indian accent. Like, I just know what they're saying.
Yeah, you have an advantage in that.
And, speaking Urdu the whole time. And I was like, oh, this is great. I'm not even going to read the fucking subtitles.
But, okay, I was trying to say, like, what is this movie like? And I was going on Equalizer a lot.
Yes, it is like
in
that.
My review.
Sure.
Because Equalizer, like, it's a slow burn and with violent thing. And there's a lot of story about what's going on. And then I thought about Old Boy.
Yeah.
And I was like, Old Boy is more.
Yeah.
Along the same lines as this.
Yeah.
Old Boy is a movie that's not really an action film.
Right.
But it has action scenes in it.
Right.
And I think that this is more like Old Boy. It's not really an action film wall to wall. It opens and closes with big action sequences. And, but overall, it's really a drama.
Yeah. I will say, I dug the structure, right? It's a long setup to an extended action scene, and then you kind of take the foot off the pedal, another long setup to extend an action scene. That middle part I loved. I was never bored. I love this journey of this character that tries to take him down, gets beat down. You get a training montage. Somebody saves him. He saves them, and he rises back up. And at that point, when he's going back to the thing, I was like, fuck him up, Monkey Man. You fuck them up. I was all rooting for him. And then when the Hijras show up and they fucking kick all sorts of ass, I was like,
oh, that pulled me right out.
I was like, they look like women, but these are men. They're going to fuck you up. You better look out.
It would have been great. I mean, they had that one guy that was hitting the bag.
Oh, I love that training scene. Come on, with the tabla and the drumming and the rhythm. That's an amazing training scene.
No, that was cool. But the one guy hit the bag that was not.
He was trying to train other people a little bit.
Yeah, it would have been cool to see, like, because out of nowhere, these guys are like ninjas.
Yeah, they're great. And it's fucking awesome.
They show up, sure. And I was like, what?
Why not?
So it pulled me out of the film a little bit
because they're like the community that people don't look at. They, you know, they're kind of misunderstood. They're oppressed, whatever. They can sneak around. Nobody's paying attention. And boom, they're there fucking slicing your head off.
I there's so many things that you guys said that I agree with. I agree with Ruggs in that when they added all the political stuff, I couldn't really figure out what the angle was.
Yeah.
Like, I know these people are nefarious and they're kicking people off their land, but I didn't know
what's the end game.
What was the motivation of that crew?
It's very simple. If you watch Bollywood movies, that all the cops are corrupt. The whole place, everything is corrupt.
Bollywood movies,
so that's kind of like what he's pulling from there.
I don't think it's very clear.
No, and then, it's not, but cops are corrupt.
I think I agree with Ruggs too. This is something I thought about during the movie is instead of telling the story of the mom dying in flashbacks, why don't you just tell it in the beginning? Why don't you just start the movie with that?
Yeah, instead of waiting.
Because instead of dragging it out throughout the movie, I felt like, what was the point of the flashbacks?
He teased it, and then he gave us the moment with the hallucinogen for the whole
thing.
It's
supposed to be a mystery, but we know what happened.
Well, he's tortured by it, right? Yeah, it's driving him forward. And I could see maybe like, okay, he thinks about his mom, and that pushes him forward whenever he's in doubt or whatever. Yeah.
That was the but wall like, he needed to get past that he helped him.
But yeah, cross. It doesn't really matter when that reveal happens. It doesn't matter if it's sure. at the end or the beginning.
Yeah.
Because it still what drives him. So yeah. you can always call back on that moment, but like I think that they flash to it so much that you could actually pick it apart. And go know what's going
except
on.
Except for like the scene where he's watching his mom actually get fucking strangled and lit on fire. Like that was fucked up. And then that's why his hands are burned. I didn't get it's brutal, and I didn't realize that's why his hands were burned.
It's brutal. I just think I don't know if the flashbacks were the best executed.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I was thinking about when Ruggs mentioned movies he compared it to, when I was watching it, I thought of the movie I thought of that had a similar kind of burn.
Yeah.
Not as good as action, but similar burn. Was a Man on Fire.
Oh yeah.
Man on Fire has a lot of like this very slow building of the drama, stylized drama and like shots of these like really well executed shots. I'll give, you know, Dev, there's a lot of beautifully lit shots.
Yeah.
The action, the kitchen fight scene is awesome.
Oh, it's great.
You know, and the scene where he fights Rana and then where he fights the other dude later, the dude upstairs, like, all brutal stuff. So like he did a really good job, I think, with the action. Although in the beginning, I think I could do without the shaky cam.
Yeah, it was a little. It was a lot.
I think he was going for like a chaotic theme, so that's fine. So I think overall it's got more pluses than it is minuses, especially if you like action.
Yeah,
but if you don't like action, I don't know if this is this best.
I think that if this was an hour and 30 minutes, it would have went over a lot better.
Possibly better as a 90 minute. But no,
the second act to me, I know you love it.
Imran, I liked it.
That second act to me, I pulled out my phone. I started being like, how long is this movie? What I literally was like, this movie, when the second act happens and they're doing all the healing and the fucking weird political stuff that might play better for some. I was like, this movie sold me a bag of fucking like nothing. Like I thought this was going to be an action movie and I don't know what the hell what I just got into.
The trailers may make you think it is a wall to wall action movie, but when it comes, I feel like it's
good. I think that what's done is done well. I just think, you know, some things just didn't work enough to keep you interested or confused you to the point that you lost interest. So those are both going on. There's a little bit too much shaky cam. And other than that, though, like those are the main drawbacks. It's like it loses steam in the middle of the movie. It's got this kind of not half baked, but just murky political message in there somewhere. And that's not fleshed out enough. And so those things kind of like weigh the movie down. And it's a little too it feels long. It feels a lot longer than it is.
I think they're trying to actually tell something that's happening in India.
Yes.
I couldn't pick up on what would, like, if this is a real, like, I couldn't pick up on if he's making a political statement and this movie's now become something like that. I couldn't fully pick
was
up
he
on
he building
what was going
a
on.
Building? Is that what he did?
No, I mean, it's just, you know, the spiritual leader is using his influence to help to make political views. And he's kind of like a cult leader, but he says it's all about God and stuff. And he's, you know, he's secretly enjoying himself in this high end place, kind of lying to his followers. Like, that's very topical. There's kind of it's a commentary on Modi, who is the prime minister of India right now, and just how the slum villages, nobody pays attention to them, and all the cops are corrupt in every fucking Bollywood movie. It's kind of hilarious. But there's a lot of corruption in Pakistan and India, so it's all commentary on that. But look, first time director, he was like, maybe I don't get another one. He's trying to throw a lot in here, right? Because he doesn't know if he's going to get another
one.
He
went for it.
Yeah. So I for me, it gives him a pass. He was trying. It was a little bit too much. Yes, it could have been cleared up
a little respectable.
Bit.
I think it's a respectable movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just,
I think it's an amazing achievement.
I do think though that think that when you're sitting in the theater and you're saying to yourself, wow, this movie's going on really long.
Yeah.
That's not good. Yeah. So, I easily could notice that this guy's really talented and should make more movies and maybe make more action movies. But, I also recognize that there could be a lull for a lot of people who are not really
sure. But look, he to put a brown guy in the lead as an action star, the only way that's happening is if you fucking make it yourself, right? He's played like the hacker characters, he's played the stereotypical brown characters, and now he's like, fuck, I'm gonna be John Wick, I'm gonna be Keanu. So, and the action scenes, a lot of great one take action scenes. The choreography, I thought, was very great. Good with
especially
the camera.
The third act.
Oh, and like it's kind of like what is it, Game of Death, where Bruce Lee's got to fight his way up to the top. Like he said, he was inspired by that. I kind of love that whole idea. Well,
they even make a reference to Wick. They're like, this is like the gun from John Wick.
Oh yeah, let's talk about that. So at the beginning, right away, you know, he's fighting, he's losing, he's making money. Shout out to Coppola, he's great. He gets a job, and I love how he got the job with this elaborate stealing the purse fucking sequence. Was fantastic.
That was good.
That was great. So he could show up there and talk to Queenie and get a job and start his infiltration. And then very quickly, he gets, you know, he sees where they are. He buys a gun and somehow trains this stray dog to deliver the gun. I don't know how the fuck he did that. I was like, wait a minute. How did the dog just bring you the gun? Smart, but kind of fucking crazy. And that whole sequence where he spikes the dude's cocaine and he starts trying, he almost gets him. The fight's great. He's got to run the chase down the stairs. I love that when he tries to jump out the window.
Oh, the window. I did laugh at that.
Like turning the trope on its head. Because that's what would really happen probably if you tried to bust out a window.
I laughed at that, but I also was like, this is a weird thing to have in this movie.
Yeah, I know.
The movie's very like, straight for the most part up until that
joke.
Part.
And then,
during this part of the movie, I was dialed in, though.
Yeah.
It was very, very good.
He switches to like a point of view camera that's like on him and it's fucking bloody. And then the fucking rickshaw chase is great. Nicki Minaj. Big bumper, great headlights on front or whatever the line was. It's kind of funny. That shit was great. And then, he crashes. He's arrested. And then he fucking breaks out again. And then when he runs through that brothel, like we saw a high-end brothel. And then you see like the discount brothel, right, for the rest of the people. And that fucking dude with an axe, that battle.
Yeah, that was great.
Holy shit.
And he bites that guy's nose
off.
He's
biting fucking noses. And then he gets shot and falls in the water. And you're like, what?
And the shot
fuck?
Where you can see the guys without his nose, I'm like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. That's a brutal moment. And then if we jump to, then he wakes up there and he, I do like the training montage. I like the idea that they saved him. So he got him to bet on him and he takes down that big dude in the Monkey Man fight. So
I did enjoy that where we just like, I'm done fucking around. I'm just going to roundhouse kick this guy in the face.
Like right away, just done. And then they're like,
part of this rigged system.
Yes. And the Charlton Copley's character's like, the fuck are you doing? And then they send in that big dude, which was amazing. That was a great fight with the fucking bat with the spikes on it. Mm-hmm. Anyways, he wins the money so they can, because their bad guy is also the same bad guy. Baba Shakti and Rana Singh are also coming after their land. So I love that whole, just, it was poetic. And the training with the double is great. And then we get to the third act. Holy shit. Where he's literally fights his way up the tower. He's using fireworks. The use of environment is great, where he's got pans, microwaves.
It is good.
Yeah, I didn't get the fireworks thing, but yeah.
I'm not sure what the fireworks were supposed to do. Like, they didn't seem like they were very powerful.
They didn't do much.
They just went off.
They didn't really do anything.
I thought it was a cool thing, but
cool.
Then now that you bring it up, I'm like,
they really do much.
What were they doing? No,
it looked cool, but maybe it's just a distraction. The girl kills Queenie, and then he chops off her thumb, and then we get this elevator fight, bro. And like that was the biggest reaction in my theater was when he jabs it in his throat with his mouth. I was like, what the
and
fuck?
He uses his mouth to cut his throat open.
Oh my god. That was fucking fantastic, and I watched an interview. He's talking about how they shot that. They shot that, and what he wanted to do this in one take. If you notice, it's one take. So the cameraman is also a stuntman, essentially like the fourth fighter in the room with them. So that's how you get all these great shots on the armpit. He's going around. It's perfectly choreographed in this tight environment. It's a one take fight. It's fucking bloody and great.
He can certainly do action.
Yeah. No. And I think. Like this is his more, it's an origin of him being a director and maybe an action star. Like that was my big fear. It was like, I'm going to buy this fucking skinny, lanky dude as a badass. And by the end, I fucking did. He seemed like a fucking badass. Like he could take, I was like, he's a fighter. You know, the hand to hand shit was great.
Yeah, there is something about this, like how he willed this into being and how he got behind it and, you know, broke his hands.
Oh, wait, we'll get into that.
So many injuries doing this movie.
But
and
hold on.
He has showed a lot of ingenuity.
Yeah.
It's like, I got so many things to say.
No, wait, the fight when he fights Rana on his way up, it's a great fucking fight. The moment where he finds the shoe, uses the shoe, is definitely like an Easter egg to like Indian families and like Mexican moms too. They would always grab their fucking sandals with this shoe, beat you down with it. So I love that little detail. And if you notice the mirrors in the room, they kept showing the mirrors. That was like a nod to Enter the Dragon's final fight where there was a bunch of mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
He throws in all these great things. And then when he finally gets to Baba Shakti, that's also a great scene where he kills him with his own fucking sandal in the fucking forehead. He gets stabbed, and then the last thing we see is him collapse off frame. I guess he's dead. Does he die?
I did like that he gets upper hand on that Baba Shakti dude, and then Baba Shakti starts like basically begging for mercy.
Yes, he's a fucking begging little wimp all of a sudden when he's being all badass. But yes, just him bringing this Indian influence, showing.
No, that's different. It's good.
It sets it apart, and the culture works great. The music, I thought, was fantastic.
There is a distinct flair and difference to this that you're seeing. You know, it's a revenge flick, but you add some extra stuff that makes it memorable.
Absolutely.
I just think the plot gets a little bogged down with some of the stuff he's going for.
No, I agree with that. But I loved. I mean, the Hijra community part itself. This is a community. They're like not exactly transgender. There's some crossdressers. There's some eunuchs. But this community, they've been around since like the 13th century in India. Like there are a lot of states there officially recognize them as a third gender. There's a lot of soap operas on Pakistani television about Hijras and what it's like to be living in their community. Like it's a pretty big thing. So I think he said something like the Hijra community was very thankful. Just for him to use that in the way he did, I thought it was just beautifully poetic. And some of the sets with the roots and the candles where he goes on a trip was fucking great. Now, here's why this movie was a miracle that it even got made. He's been working on this thing for 10 years. He started writing this 10 years ago. He had done 4 to 5 months of location scouting in Mumbai, India, in the slums. They had seen all the locations, picked everything out. They're shooting this and COVID hits. He loses all of his locations in India, lockdown. They have to go to a little island in Indonesia where he's never been, doesn't have time to location scout. Also, because of COVID, he lost a lot of his actors. He had to put in like the accountant and gaffers and lighting guys in the fucking movie. His production designer couldn't make it over. He loses his John Wick stunt team. He finds a dude on YouTube to come and help him. One of his gaffers has a fucking heart attack and dies during this period. He couldn't get a lot of his equipment. Some of this movie is literally shot on his iPhone, right? Okay, so now, 2 weeks before the movie, they're training. He breaks two toes doing fight training. Filming the first fight scene of the movie, he breaks his hand. And they put this pin in his hand right there, and he goes back and films the movie. He cannot put like more than 2 pounds of pressure on his hand, but he fucking goes through it. There was money problems in that VIP room. At first, they didn't have enough money to have tabletops on the fucking on the table, so they shoot everything shoulder up. Someone maxed out their credit card. They got tabletops. They only had 3 breakaway tables, so they would do a take with the breakaway table. They'd stop. They'd pick up the pieces and glue the shit back together and do another take because they couldn't afford any more. The rickshaw scene, he taped his phone inside the rickshaw to get that. Inside the crash scene, he only had 8 stuntmen to work with, and they had to keep changing their facial hair to make him look like different people. He tore his shoulder. He got an eye infection filming the bathroom scene with the dirty water everywhere. And then after the movie is made, Netflix gets the rights to this for $30 million. They're going to release it on Netflix. And then they have second thoughts. They're not sure it's going to play well in India. They don't want to put it out. They start shopping it around. The movie's essentially dead. When Jordan Peele and his company, Monkey Paw, see it. And he's like, this needs to be in the theater. He convinces Universal to pay $10 million for the rights and gives it a theatrical release. So Jordan Peele, after all this, like, resurrects this movie. Now, all of that shit, this movie shouldn't be as fucking good and it even came out as it is with all that shit is wild. Like, what a fucking boot camp he went through in his first fucking movie. And the product is pretty amazing. I think it's, after all that, it's fucking dope. So that's the story. Isn't that crazy, though? That's a lot of things. That's disaster after disaster.
Would you have done this amount of research if this movie wasn't from the country?
Oh, absolutely. Come on. It's fascinating regardless.
It is good.
If it wasn't a brown guy.
It's good that it's nice to see that he went through all that and still produced a solid movie.
So, I mean, I'm not saying this. Passion is clearly in this, and you feel it, and
I'm excited to see it. Hopefully he continues to direct.
Yeah.
And hopefully his movies just get better and better. It's a good first.
I think he'll get some more work. And just like you, I hope he does another action movie. I don't, you know, you don't got to do Monkey Man 2. Like, he's dead. Just move on and do something else. But it is an exciting birth of an action star, an action director. Okay. Let's final thoughts. Rate it, rank it, or just rate it. Sorry, don't rank it. Anthony.
What am I ranking it against?
Nothing. Never mind the ranking. Okay. Just rate it.
rate it. I'm going to give it a solid 6.5 out of 10.
Okay.
I think the things I mentioned still ring true. Really, really solid action. Made me visibly or audibly say things, which you know means it's good. Very beautifully shot at times, but... it's also not good that I had to pull out my phone a few times and wonder what the fuck was going on. So, you know, I can't be like, this is an overwhelmingly awesome movie when for a decent portion of the movie, I was like, is this over? Is this going to end? What? I don't like this at all anymore.
Where is this going?
Yeah. It just got so slow. So yeah. 6.5 out of 10.
Okay. Rugs.
I feel like if I would have seen it at home, I probably would have been more dialed in, but when I go out and I'm sitting in the theater and I'm feeling the weight of a movie,
yeah,
that for some reason affects me like worse. Like, I can watch a lot more slower moving things when I'm at home.
You think it would have been better if there was a streaming?
Yeah,
release?
I feel like maybe that would have been a better experience, to be honest, because there was nobody in the theater.
Well, that's also,
so it's not
weird.
Like, I'm getting the community feel.
Right. You could have just been at home.
Yeah. Okay. When all that's said and done, I really admire this film. All right, I do. Even though I have my criticisms of it, and there are legitimate ones, but he really tried to punch above his weight class. He really made a lot of film for $10 million. He really tried to pack in all these things. Some of these things didn't work, but he really went for it. And if his job that he wanted to do was to show everybody he could do action, he did it.
Yeah.
If you wanted to show people you could direct a film, he did it. There's nothing embarrassingly bad in this movie. There's just some misfires that, you know, that caused the movie to be, maybe it could have been fixed with editing. So I really think it's a good movie. People should go out and see it or wait for it on video if you're a little bit worried about it dragging on.
Yeah, go see it. There's nothing else out. Give it some money. Come on.
Sure. I'm going to go 7.5. I think it's good enough to recommend.
Okay.
So, yeah. But just with a caveat, you got to warn the people. Like, it's not John Wick.
It's not wall to wall.
I think if you
action.
Know, if you go, it's more like an Old Boy or like one of the, or a Equalizer where it's a slow burn that explodes at the end. I think that people will be more prepared to see it.
Look, it's not a perfect movie. It has all those flaws. Absolutely. He may have just been trying too much, but that for a first time out, fucking excellent effort despite his flaws. Fucking 9 out of 10 for me, easily.
Jesus Christ, Imran.
I mean, what do you think I was going to say? It's like, I just felt he pulled off the cool. He pulled off the influences of like what he wanted to do, and he and put a lot of great cultural reference. Great, you know, some stuff we haven't seen, like making it unique. Western audiences, that was my only concern, is they may not understand the politics of India. And so either he should have explained it better or pulled more of it out.
I think it's a It's it's incumbent on the person who's making the movie for that market to try and satiate that curiosity. So,
but I mean, this character is like a Batman, like a Punisher. I don't know, like it's like the bride.
He's Monkey Man.
Bill. He's Monkey Man. And I thought it was fucking great. No, I highly recommend it. I thought it was fucking great. I'm going 9 out of 10. Fuck you guys. 9 out of 10. All right. That's good. Let's do some news from the nation.
It's time for news from the nation.
It's time for news from the nation.
It stinks. It stinks. It stinks.
First of all, thanks for all the birthday messages, Anthony and Nation. That's always fun to see. It wasn't as while we didn't have a great moment like David Beckham last year.
No,
yeah, was that last year already?
That was last year, but this year I'm gonna highlight your message, Anthony. Let's take a minute to wish a happy 57th birthday to the man, the myth, the nerd. And then my other favorite comment was Lisa Morrison saying, "I don't look a day over 65." It's true. That's a fact. She didn't say a lie. That's a true thing. I don't look a day over 65. I'm 73. My sister got me a pair of Spider-Man Crocs for my birthday.
Yeah, and are you wearing them right now?
With gibbets. I am not. Here's the thing. That's what I wanted to ask you guys. What's the fashion decision? Can a grown man, I just felt like these are kid shoes. They're great. I love them. But can a grown man fucking actually walk around with Spider-Man Crocs out in public? Is this,
if you're confident, you can do whatever you want. Is it doable?
Can I pull this off?
I think, Amron, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, I think you probably could rock those just because you're you. But yeah, I think people wear Crocs.
They do.
Crocs are pretty polarizing.
But they are. Yes, that's what I think. And first of all,
Crocs, Anthony?
No, I would not wear it. I would not. I'm not at this point in my life. Maybe if I get a little older, I'd maybe not. No,
kids wearing the fucking shit with socks and Crocs out in the open.
Yeah, no, people wear them. It's up to you. I mean,
there's kids that wear them, yeah.
But there's kids that wear them. So
there are kids.
I had to pull all the gibbets off. I was like, I got to draw the line at the gibbets, please.
What's a gibbet?
Those are those little things you put in the holes. It's like one's like a Spider-Man head, or one's like it says Spider-Man head. You know, that's like a whole industry in itself.
Yeah,
gibbets.
I went to the doctor and he was wearing Crocs.
Oh, see? But the doctors are wearing Crocs.
And I'm like, I don't know if I want this guy operating.
So, like, no, you definitely don't. If your surgeon is wearing Crocs, you have made a mistake.
Yeah.
I might, like, if I go to a comic book convention, like, if we go to C2E2, I'll wear those. It's completely appropriate. I did wear them. We went out to Korean barbecue for my birthday, and I wore them, and it was fine. Nobody said anything. So I was just like, can I wear these?
You can. All right, certain situations.
I'm going to wear them.
Yeah, sure.
I think Imran, you could.
Okay.
Yeah, I think
we'll give you the pass.
Okay, great. That's all I need to hear. I was worried. Anyways, to get back to the news for the nation, I just got two comments about Monkey Man from Scott Sanguarium from Mostly Superheroes podcast. He said, got to see this on Wednesday. Fantastic movie, gritty, visceral action with a great story. Very impressed with Dev's directorial debut. And Logan Janice, also from Mostly Superheroes podcast, said, fun and cool. I enjoyed it. I don't think a lot of people went to see this. I was hoping to make a little bit more money, but it may have legs and they will make a profit. Go see it. Okay. Let's finish with some, what are we watching? Anthony, what are you watching?
Well, I was watching the, NCAA tournament a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But I did catch some WrestleMania
clips.
That's
what I want to hear about. What happened?
Apparently John Cena and The Rock and Undertaker came back. I mean, I don't watch pro wrestling very much anymore, but those are all names, not necessarily John Cena, but The Rock and Undertaker. Those are names from when I was really into pro wrestling as a kid. So
that's crazy.
It was fun seeing the clips on Instagram.
I heard
this was an awesome one.
The Rock hasn't been in a match since like 2016 or something. This was his first time back.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
it was like a cameo. Like he came in, did a couple moves.
And he's a heel now or still? I don't know.
The bad guy. Yeah.
The bad guy. Yeah. People seem to
evidently he's in Roman Reigns' tribe.
People seem to like him as a bad guy. I did see this one picture of this guy hold up a sign, which I thought was hilarious. It was handwritten. It just said Black Adam sucked. I was like, that's fun. That's pretty funny. So yeah, I heard it was a big deal. Rock is back and Cena, and you could see him. I don't know. All right.
He was cursing.
Oh, shit. Really?
Yeah.
Man, he's coming back hard.
He's in a potty mouth.
Okay. Ruggs, what have you been watching?
Well, I watched X-Men 97.
Oh, yes. The new episode 4.
Yeah. The Storm episode.
It was half and half. They did the Mojo World, right? With Jubilee and Sunspot, but it's a video game now. Makes sense instead of like amusement park.
That was fun. It was a good episode.
And then Storm and Forge and her, what, like facing her demons and trying to get her power back with that bird. It's her.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
So I think the X-Men 97's turning out to be kind of fun.
Yeah.
And it does deliver. So if you like the old stuff, it's still got some of that magic in there. So I think it's worth checking out.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I also watched Shogun.
Oh, how far are you in that?
I also watched The Three-Body Problem.
Oh, shit. Okay, well, hold on. Shogun, how far are you in Shogun?
I think I watched everything that came out. Oh, so
spoiler alert. Okay. Now, how are your thoughts? What do you like and what sticks out?
I like it.
Fucking hell, dude. This show, every episode, I feel gets better and better.
It's a good show.
Holy shit.
It's Game of Thrones in feudal Japan.
It's very Shakespearean.
Yeah.
And the twists and turns and like the thing that happens at the end of the last episode is crazy. But this whole time, what is up with Toranaga? Like, does he have a plan? Or does he not? It's very interesting.
Feel like it's like the three-body problem.
Okay, yes. It's similar it's the to
same
that.
Idea.
Yeah.
Same strategy.
That is interesting. He keeps everything very close to the chest. You don't know.
Yeah.
He promises Crimson Sky, and I was like, that sounds dope. Let's do that. And now I don't know if they're going to do it. And I was like, what the fuck?
I don't know. This is going to be it's a masterstroke. He's waiting. Yeah. He's waiting in the wings to reveal his plan.
It's not so much inaction as he's waiting for like the right moment.
The thing I like about the show is it's done very well.
Yeah.
It feels authentic.
Yeah.
It's based on a book, a classic book.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you're learning some.
Yeah. It's very educational. You learn some Japanese and some light history.
Learn things.
How great is Anna Sawai in this compared to her character in Monarch?
Yeah, much better. Oh my gosh, much more likable.
Yeah. She's fantastic. The way when she translates, she's kind of like has to rewrite things so that people just don't start killing each other immediately, right?
She always softens the blow.
Everything, she's like rewriting the script on the fly between them because she's got to keep the peace. And then that brothel scene. Sexiest fucking scene where nobody takes their clothes off. It was fucking just the tension was amazing. So good. That was like a highlight.
I was pissed.
Oh, really? You wanted her to go in with the threesome?
Well, before you watch the show, like there's a little crawl on the top that says there's going to be nudity and whatever. I'm like, all right. It's always a guy's butt.
It has been only man ass so far. That is true. There's been a little side boob, I thought. Maybe? No, I don't know.
It's seen a little breast assist.
Okay,
but like,
three body problem. This fucking eclipse we had today reminded me of the three-body problem a little bit. I was like, this is kind of like the show. What did you think of that? That's a wild fucking show.
Dude, spoilers. I got one thing. Spoilers coming, so turn it off if you don't want it. There is one scene.
Oh, episode 5?
That's so ridiculous.
Is it the ship in episode 5?
Yes.
That scene was amazing. That's my favorite
fucking
scene.
And I was like, oh my God, they're going in such a crazy place. Anthony.
Yes.
I got to tell you this. They murder kids in this.
Women,
little kids.
Yes, you see them.
Yeah, and it's graphic and like.
What's it called? The three-body show?
The three-body problem on Netflix.
Yeah.
They are sliced in several sections by nanofiber threads that are invisible, and you see kids just fucking disintegrate.
And we did this, by the way. The good guys.
Yeah, to try to stop the alleged bad guys. They murdered a few to save
the men. Yeah, they're trying to. So I'm just going to. Here, let's give you the pitch. So weird shit starts happening around the world. And there's like a flashback of this scientist, woman scientist in China that's working, trying to communicate with aliens for the Chinese military. And they're just sending a signal out into nowhere, not expecting anybody to return. And she gets a signal and basically... long and short of it is there's an impending invasion coming at some point. Mm-hmm. So basically there's like this society of people who have been communicating with these aliens, and we just get hip to it now. So like basically the government's like now all of a sudden figures out that, oh shit, aliens are coming. And now like everybody understands that aliens are coming. So they basically cobbled together a team to fucking
come up with a plan.
Yeah. And some of the things that they have to do to try and stop these, this cult of humans that are working for the aliens is fucking barbaric.
The cult is fascinating because they refer to the aliens as our Lord. So yeah. Before you know they're aliens, you're like, is this a religious group that's trying to stop science so it can't disprove God? But they just call the aliens our Lord, and they speak to them. They communicate with them, and then they get abandoned. And this invasion isn't coming for like 400 years, by the way, at the speed they're at. And yeah, it's basically a face-off, and they got to figure out how do we either learn more about them or stop them, which I don't think you can stop them. So the book, there's a trilogy. So hopefully they'll do the second book in a season. There'll be three seasons.
I want to know what it's happens. It's not an action show.
No.
It's very talky.
Yeah.
It's very much like
a mind-fucky show, though.
It's mind-fucky.
Yeah, that's what I love.
I don't think that a lot of people will like this. This is the type of shit that I'm interested in because it's about more than just aliens.
It's heady sci-fi, yes.
Yeah, it's about like existence and what are you doing and thinking about 400 years in the future.
Right.
Like, that's all crazy-ass shit to think about. So it's kind of shit that I like.
And then there's a whole video game part in it that I was like, that's cool, but I'm not sure.
They spent a lot of time with that. They shouldn't.
I know.
They should have spent
ultimately what it didn't really. It was just a recruitment tool for the other thing, I guess.
Right.
But man, that episode 5 ship scene was fucking bonkers. I was like, what?
I still don't understand a lot of the shit that's going on. I don't even know if this is scientifically sound. I don't know if any of this shit makes sense.
Some of it is sound. There's been articles about breaking down the science in it. But Isaac Gonzalez is hot, too. So
didn't help. A huge bonus.
Yeah, it hurt.
Bonerous.
Huge.
Yes.
Geek boner. Yes. What else, Ruggs?
Did I watch anything else? I think that's good. I think I watched, Shogun. And Three Body Problem.
Okay,
Invincible.
Let me do my 15 things. Physical 100 season 2 finally put out the last two episodes of finale.
Imran, go outside.
It was fucking great, dude. They pushed these people to muscle exhaustion, complete muscle failure, and that's what I was there for. And they fucking did it. The last three to make the final things are great, and it's just brute force. It's fucking fantastic. Great season. I watched that movie American Fiction that won the Best Adapted Screenplay Oscar. It was also nominated. Sterling K. Brown was nominated. Jeffrey Wright was nominated. It's really fucking good. Have you guys heard about the story of this movie?
No.
Jeffrey Wright plays this writer. He's black. He plays a writer that's black, except his agent wants him to be a black writer. Right. And write a black book. But he's like, why do I have to write a black book? And, you know, to whatever. I don't want to do it. He thinks he's higher than that. He comes from a family where his parents were doctors. His brother and sister are doctors. And he's like, he has a PhD, not a doctor. He has a doctorate, but he's a teacher. So there's a tragedy in the family. He's got to take care of his mom. He needs money. And he's like, oh, you want a black book? I'll write you a black fucking book. And writes like the most ridiculous, cliched stereotype with all the slang and everything. And guess what? Turns out to be a hit. And now he's got to deal with that. There's some fucking great humor, great drama, great performances, great lines, very smartly written. It's a very good movie. Check it out. Mm. It's on rental right now.
It's like the story of Pootie Tang.
Sort of, yeah. Where like he's like, all right, I'll write a black book, and of course it's gonna be like a number one bestseller, and now he's gotta jump through more hoops, but then there's a crazy twist at the end, and it's fantastic. It's really where it ended was kind of unpredictable. It's really good. I can see why it got so many Oscar nominations. The other thing I watched that I enjoyed, Apple TV Plus has this documentary two-part series on Steve Martin. There's two episodes that are like an hour and a half each. The first one deals with his stand-up career up until like 1980. And then the second half is his later career. Like, he reinvented himself like three times. I've always loved Steve Martin, and this doc is fantastic. It shows you some early footage. He was like, I don't think a lot of younger people maybe be like, oh, what was that movie? Father of the Bride guy or the Only Murders in the Building guy. He had this whole career. He was the first stand-up comedian to sell over 1 million albums with a stand-up comedy record. First comic to sell out arenas in his shows. And then gets to his heights in like 1980 and kind of just like stops. And he's like, I want to do movies, and walks away because he's done everything and they've seen all the jokes. And then his movie career and his banjo playing, and then kind of another resurgence now with.
He wrote books too.
Oh yeah. He wrote books. He recorded a folk album, like a legit, I think it got some Grammy nominations. What an amazing career this guy has. He's great. And the scenes with him and Martin Short, they just fuck with each other all the time. It's so funny. They're like the perfect fucking foils for each other. And they've gone out on tour, both of them doing like old man jokes and shit. So it was really good. If you like Steve Martin at all, I highly recommend. You learn a lot about him. And he's very open and vulnerable in this. And the early stand-up shit is always great. Like, I have some favorite Steve Martin jokes I still know from like his stand-up and then SNL and all that. And then the last thing, I just randomly watched the show on Netflix. It's fucking hilarious. It's called The Magic Prank Show. Magic Prank Show. You guys, have you ever watched that Johnny Knoxville had a prank show with Eric Andre and Gabourey Sidibe? Have you seen that?
No.
That show is fantastic, right? But it's Johnny Knoxville, some fucked up mean pranks. This is this guy, Justin. I forget his name. He's the Magic for Humans guy. He's like the Netflix magician. He has a team of magicians of all different disciplines. So imagine doing elaborate pranks with fucking really good magicians. It's some wild fucking hilarious shit. He does two pranks every episode. They're like half an hour. And if I'm the person on the end of these pranks, I would be shitting in my pants because he's doing everything from sleight of hand to big illusions to mentalism to hypnotism. Crazy shit just to get. But his pranks aren't mean. It's all to get another party to understand how someone else is feeling. So like one guy was always driving distracted and his girlfriend wanted to prank him to make him understand how scary that is. And they put him in an Uber where somebody else is driving and it goes crazy. There's a lot of stunt driving. And then the driver disappears. He ends up in the trunk in a bag while the cops pull him over and they're completely confused. Fun shit like that is fantastic. You go binge through this. It is wild. It's hilarious. And like they show you some magic tricks, but then they don't show you the big ones. They still keep it a secret. But it's so good. It was really good. I didn't think I was going to like this show. And I was like, this fucking show is great. Magic prank show. All right, so there's
Imran. I admire your passion for consuming media.
Holy shit! I couldn't stop watching it. I was like, I'm just watching the rest of this. God damn it!
I don't know how you do it.
And there's
you just make a podcast every day.
And you know, yeah, I still there's still so many things I don't get around to that I'm like, fuck, I need to watch this. Fuck, I need to watch. I don't know how I do it either. I don't sleep well. I don't use my CPAP machine, so that doesn't help. So next week, here's the thing. Regarding next week, my suggestion is I would like to review that Alex Garland movie, Civil War. I've heard lots of crazy things. I've heard it's right now on Rotten Tomatoes. Again, just like Monkey Man was a week ago, this movie's sitting at 93% with 43 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes.
You can do it.
So I just look. I know there's no fucking Captain America or Iron Man, but the movie looks fucking wild. And some of the reactions and early reviews I read say calling it a masterpiece, like up there with like Dune masterpiece, kind of masterpiece.
Okay,
all right, let's do it.
Okay,
a masterpiece.
Just revealed to the viewers what we're doing next week.
Civil War, another smaller movie, like Monkey Man. Yes, Civil War. Okay,
all right.
That's it for this week, Ruggs. Where can the listener find you online?
Rug Boy Show on Twix.
Twix it. Oh, I like left Twix. Anthony, where can the listener find you?
Not watching as much TV as Imran. Hopefully I'm going to go outside. Jesus Christ.
What's that? Imran. What's outside?
Although UFC 300 is this weekend, so that's what I'll be watching.
Ooh, okay. Okay, what is the big match in that one? Anything exciting?
It's a pretty stacked card overall. There's a lot of big fights. Okay. There's not any one that you're like, this is the big one. Okay. They're all pretty good.
Okay. All right, we'll get a report next week how that went. In the meantime, listeners, share this show, spread it around, tweet it, Twix it, post it, text it. We'd appreciate it. Thank you for listening to the Jock and Nerd Podcast. My name is Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the jock.
And he's the nerd.
We'll peep you next time.
I fucking loved it.
I really don't give a shit.
Thing, I offered you a chance to be a cop, and you blew it.
My balls was hot.
Jock and Nerd. My balls were hot.